Okay, well, hello. This is one of those days when I ran in the house and ran to the computer and sat down, and I'm here. We went to see a movie this afternoon, The Odd Life of Timothy Green. And the movie got out at 4:33, and you know, it's a little bit away, so we came home and I walked right in the door and you know, right to the seat. So here I am. So happy Sunday, everyone. We are here for the 7 steps to awakening. We're going to begin with number 303. So here is a link to 303 for those of you who are in the room. If you're listening on the radio, you can just go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to that website, if you look up on the title bar or the menu bar, you'll see a step 2. You click on step 2 and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 303, because that's where we're going to begin. And Cheryl is asking, how is the movie? I thought it was great. You know, but I guess it depends on what you like. For me, it was a feel-good movie from pretty much beginning to end. And, you know, it had like little tears and a big full heart through the whole movie. Not boo-hoo crying, but just little tears through the whole movie, but they were the feel-good tears. So I've been immersed in feel-good crying this afternoon, and I think everybody knows that for some reason, every now and then a cry feels really nice, you know, and so it was just that nice feel. So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm a little hungry. If I had had any spare time between movie and teaching, I probably would have gotten something to eat. So if you hear what sounds like a lion roaring during the teaching, it's not a lion. It's just my belly. I'll eat right after. So why don't we go ahead and take a moment of silence, and then we will begin. Amen. All right, so as I mentioned, we are beginning with 303. I did put the link in the room, but I think a couple people have popped in since then, so here's the link again. We are in step 2, and the speaker that is being quoted is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And so this is what 303 says in the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. It's a tiny, tiny conversation between a questioner and Sri Nisargadatta. So it says, questioner, if all that passes has no being, then the universe has no being either. And Sri Nisargadatta says, whoever denies it, of course the universe has no being. So why don't we go ahead and look at the journal. Number 303. Everything perceived is not real. Take this to heart. Everything perceived is not real. Take this to heart. Now what's one thing maybe that's interesting about number 303 is it doesn't say take this to head. You know, we can think about the fact that the world's not real, and none of that thinking is actually helpful. I'm sure that you've all had the experience of doing the thinking. I mean, I would imagine that we're all the same and that you've had that experience. So, you know, something may happen or somebody may say something, and for some reason the head goes into, well, the world's not real, this isn't real. And the head tries to deny the experience from the head level. But at least in me, when the head's trying to do that, there's something about the whole thing that doesn't feel right. You know, there's a, how would I describe the feeling? When the head is trying to deny reality, deny something as real, I don't know, there's just this feeling, I'm going to say that it's in my chest, but it's a feeling of uncomfortableness, not right. You know, it's not a enlightening feeling. it's a constriction. That's what it is. An enlightening feeling is an opening, right? And this is a constriction. So when the head tries to get involved in denying experience, denying it, saying it's not real, even if, you know, all of the thoughts that are coming from the head are the exact same thoughts that you may have read in A Course in Miracles, or you may have heard Ramana Maharshi or Srinivasa Gadadhara Maharaj say, or you may have read in NTI. Even if everything the head is saying is exactly what has come from enlightened teachings, somehow when it's handled by the head, it doesn't feel right. If there's a constriction, there's a denial going on there. And it's the type of denial that is actually a repression, an avoidance, and it's not the type of denial that is healing or awakening. But the heart has another way of looking at the world and realizing that it's not real. That is opening. There's something about the heart realizing that the world is not real, where you're able to look at someone and know with an absolute knowing that they are okay, even while they appear to be in front of you suffering. Know with an absolute knowing that they are okay, and yet reach out and help anyway. And that's something that the mind can't understand. To the mind, either they're okay or they need help. You know, the mind is such a dual thinker. So either they're okay and therefore they do not need your help, or they are not okay and they need your help. And the mind is not able to understand that place where they are okay and I help. Because for the mind, it's an either-or thing. And what's wonderful about allowing the heart to deny the world is that the heart denies the world as true, but the heart does not deny the experience as present. That's another thing the head can't do. If the head wants to deny the world, then the head also wants to deny the experience. But the heart somehow is able to deny the world without denying the experience. So the heart knows, again, that the person that you are looking at, or maybe this time it's you. You know, maybe something has happened in your life. And maybe, you know, you are, you know, maybe someone has died. That's an excellent example. Maybe someone you really care about, someone really close to you has died, and you cannot help but mourn, right? Because the relationship was just so close, and the mourning is so natural. And so you are mourning, you are sad, you miss this person's presence, right? Well, the heart is able to be with you in a way where everything, this is all going on within you, where there's a knowing that reality is not at all affected by the scene of death. Therefore, the reality is not affected by the fact that someone died. The reality is not affected by the fact that you seem to miss this one that died. Somehow the reality is not at all affected. And so everything is actually okay. And yet it can allow the mourning too. And anyone who's ever mourned this way knows how it feels. It's like both a deep peace and a crying at the same time. They can both happen. I remember when I first started writing NTI. NTI talks about experience. And NTI definitely clearly teaches right from the beginning, from Matthew. It wasn't shy at all. NTI definitely teaches the world is not real. But it calls experience real. And it doesn't mean real in the sense that experience is eternal. And it doesn't mean real in the sense that experience actually affects reality in some way. It just means that it's a present experience. And to deny a present experience with the head is just not healing or not enlightening. It's moving in the opposite direction. So all those step two and A Course in Miracles and NTI and the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and the teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj are all about teaching that the world is not real. This is not a teaching that's to be taken to the head. In fact, it seems like I heard Muji once say something about, or somebody told me Muji said, I don't remember which way it was, but it seems like somehow it was accredited to Muji. That the teaching that the world is not real is a poor teaching, but the realization is a wonderful realization. And I'm certain that if it's true that Muji said that, if I heard it secondhand, well, then of course I can't, you know, maybe it was a mistake, but I'm sure that if it is true that Muji said that, when he said it was a poor teaching, that's because he knows that what happens is the head takes the teaching. And then the head tries to do all of the inappropriate things with it, like denying an experience. You know, not having compassion for a fellow person who's suffering, right? That's all the stupid stuff the head does. But the heart doesn't do that. The heart is not dual. It doesn't need the either-or situation. The heart says, I know that you are okay. I mean, I really do. I know that this is just a temporary experience and that your reality is untouched. And at the same time, let me help you. Let me help you through this time. Right? No conflict. So everything perceived is not real. Take this to heart. Do not take this teaching that the world is not real to your head. It does not belong there. It will be misused and abused there. Take it to your heart. Let your heart teach you what this means. And let your heart guide you in all of your actions. And if you notice it's floated up to the head, and you notice that, you know, something happens and there's your head trying to use the teaching to deny it, right? Deny the experience. Just breathe and just kind of imagine that the teaching is falling from your head to your heart. And just kind of be at peace for a moment and let it fall to your heart and let your heart reinterpret it. So everything perceived is not real. Take this to heart. All right, let's scroll down. And on the left, underneath the comment and reply area, you will see a 304. You can click on the 304. I will also post this in the room. There is a link to 304. And yeah, Barb has typed, the heart knows the truth. Yeah. All right, so 304 again, this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj that I am quoting from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I am offering you exactly what you need. Awakening. I am offering you exactly what you need. Awakening. All right, let's look at the journal, number 304. By being firm, which means consistent, with what is taught in this journal, one prepares for awakening. I think, you know, many of you all know my story. So you know, unless you missed this part, you know that, you know, kind of my awakening story begins, probably when I was 28 or 29 years old, somewhere around there. I remember where I lived. I lived in San Angelo, Texas at the time. I was in the Air Force. And I don't really remember why, except that maybe ever since I was about 11 or 12, I wanted to know what the truth was. You know, I just wanted, you know, I felt this wanting to know God, wanting to know what truth was. And I tried a couple of different religions. You know, I started off with the Southern Baptists because they were the nearest church to my house. Later, I was involved with Jehovah's Witnesses. There were also times that I lost interest in this calling, and I, you know, partied and didn't even think about spirituality. So I kind of went back and forth from the time that I was like 11 or 12 until 28 or 29. And then what happened at 28 or 29 is I think I was actually bored. I was a little bored, to be honest, in San Angelo, Texas. There wasn't a lot to do there. And in my boredom, this desire to know what the truth is came back up. And I found myself saying what I call the first really heartfelt prayer, a prayer that shifted the universe, actually. I said a prayer. I prayed to God to show me the truth. And I said, I didn't care what it was. I just wanted to know the truth. And that probably was, you know, one of the places where my 2 feet firmly got planted on the early beginnings of the spiritual path. And it's, you know, the story goes on quite a bit from there, but I'm not going to tell it because it's not important at this point. What's important was the prayer that put my feet on the spiritual path in the beginning was a prayer for truth. Now, I had been, you know, steeped in, you know, Southern Baptist and Jehovah's Witness as my two prior attempts at finding God. And I really did not think about finding God at that point anywhere outside of a Christian religion. And I thought that my prayer would lead me to a Christian religion that had the proper interpretation of the Bible. And of course, as you know, it didn't. But this is what I thought. So when I said my prayer asking for truth, and I said, I don't care what it is, I just want truth. You know, ideas about, for example, being an enlightened one were nowhere near my thought process. In fact, to be honest, I can't even remember if back then I knew anything about enlightened ones. I don't even know if I knew that Buddha was considered an enlightened one. I mean, that just wasn't in my spiritual radar. So I wanted truth. It seems to me that even though, you know, you could say I've come far on this journey now, much further down the path, it seems important to stay with that first prayer. I want truth. It seems like there are some very similar sounding purposes that actually can take us into ego at first, maybe a little bit, and then if we stay with it, more and more and more. You know, and of course, one of the most common, I'm sure you guys are aware, one of the most common is, I want to be enlightened. I want to be enlightened, unless that has a very specific meaning. It depends on really how your mind interprets it. It's not the words themselves, right? It's what you mean by those words. So if the words, I want to be enlightened, is the same as I want to know truth, well, then those words are fine. But what often happens with the idea, I want to be enlightened, is there's this idea of me as an enlightened self. And that idea is not the same idea as wanting truth, because in fact, we can be quite deluded into thinking we are enlightened selves when we're not. So if we're deluded into thinking we're an enlightened self, we've not found truth. So you see how, depending on how our mind is, what our mind is looking for, how we could be led to truth or not led to truth. It seems to me like I heard, hi Lisa. I have a beautiful picture hanging here. It seems to me like I heard Adyashanti say this once too, and I haven't listened to Adyashanti more than a couple of times when people have sent me little things and asked me to watch. But one of those little things that somebody asked me to watch, Adyashanti was saying this. He was saying something like, the purest desire that you can have that will take you to awakening the fastest is to want to know truth. Don't ask for anything else. Don't ask to be enlightened. You know, don't ask, you know, to be able to heal your body. Just stay with wanting truth. And you know what was really powerful about that first prayer that I said is, I not only said I wanted truth, I said, I don't care what it is. And sometimes what happens as we move further along the path and we become, quote, educated on what truth is supposed to be, you know, we learn it from A Course in Miracles, or we learn it from our teachers, our gurus, what truth is. Well, then we forget to stay in that I don't care what it is, and we start grasping ideas or concepts of, oh, this is what truth is, I want that. Okay, so, you know, depending on what your concepts are, maybe we say, oh, truth is happiness all the time. I want happiness all the time. Or maybe we say, truth is not being aware of my body. I want to not be aware of my body. And we start, you know, we start conceptualizing, and then we get caught in desiring the concept. But, you know, it seems like the most pure way, the most pure goal, if you want to call it a goal, the most pure goal is just to stay with, I want truth, and I don't care what that is. Allow truth to, you know, show up for us by exploding and shattering all of our previous ideas and concepts of what it is. So that's what I call purity. Every now and then you may see me use the word purity, or you may see me talk about having a pure mind. This is what I mean by a pure mind, a mind that stays focused on the goal. I'm going to go ahead and use the word goal again because it's just the best word that's popping out right now. Focused on the word goal focused on the goal without concepts of what that is, what that's supposed to look like. Right. Now, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, I am offering you exactly what you need, awakening. And the journal says, by being firm or consistent with what is taught in this journal, one prepares for awakening. So what this is saying to me, and of course, you know, to be honest, it's talking to me, it's directly to me, this is my journal. So what this says for me is that there really are going to be other ideas that are going to float into my head. You know, I'm going to read things on Facebook or read things in an article or see things in YouTube or whatever. You know, I'm in a world of information, and information is going to come. You know, I'm not completely secluded, although I've cut out a lot of the information. I'm not completely secluded by any stretch of the imagination. And as that information comes, and as my mind starts to get attracted over in, oh, look at this, or oh, look at this, what I'm to do is to come back to this. I'm to come back to this 7 steps journal and this 7 steps work and stay with what's being given to me. This is keeping me on that, you know, the Bible calls it the straight and narrow path. You know, straight and narrow, meaning it's not having leeway with concepts. It's staying a very pure path, but it's a straight, direct path to awakening. And so that's what this is reminding me of. Don't get off path. Don't get, you know, off on a distraction by being attracted to some idea, some concept of what awakening is or what enlightenment is, or, you know, don't get caught up in these glitters, you know. And the person speaking may be speaking from a very pure place, but it's the listening through the mind where it becomes the glitter that becomes a distraction. And what happens for me is that when I'm doing the seven steps work and I'm in that state of contemplation and the guidance is coming, it's actually not going through the mind. It's going directly through the heart. So it's very pure, where when I listen to outside information, listen to someone else speak, it somehow passes through the mind. So by staying with this inner work and very focused on what this inner work is doing, I'm kind of, you know, I'm staying pure. In fact, you know, again, I know that's why I was brought to this work at the beginning of this year, because what had happened last year was I had started listening to, at first, just one teacher, Muji, and, you know, and I never heard anything from Muji that I found questionable. I just want to say that. But then as I started listening to Muji, people would say, well, try this one and try this one and try this one and try this one. I started listening to like a bunch of different people. And I got to be honest with you guys. I would love to lie, because some things are not fun to talk about out loud. But I'm not going to lie. It's not helpful. My mind started to go off into what I'm going to call spiritual ego. And in this case, by spiritual ego, I mean my mind wanted to be enlightened. And my mind saw it as something I can do very, very easily. But I remember one friend saying to me, Regina, it's so easy to be enlightened. And the same friend, only a few weeks later, by the way, said to me, by the way, are you still suffering from hate? Because the friend is. So the enlightenment that my friend thinks is being so easily experienced, is still accompanied by waves of great hatred that confuse and upset my friend. And my mind was starting to go off there. I mean, I've had the thought that it'd be fun to go back and listen to some of my teachings from this time. I haven't yet. It's possible the teachings are still quite pure, because there's something that happens when I teach. But I thought it would be fun to go back and listen to the teachings and see if you can even hear any of that in there. This being attracted to the glitter. And fortunately, what happened at about the time when this was happening was that I was guided to go to India. And when I went to India, it was not during the time that everyone is there. There's a time starting in January when there's lots of teachers there, and there's lots of people there, and there's lots going on, and there's lots of satsangs you can go to. But when I was there, none of that was happening. It was prior to Christmas, and the Westerners had not arrived. And I just spent a lot of time in the mornings sitting in the old hall, just sitting there. And a lot of time in the afternoon just walking the mountain. And as you guys know, I wasn't on Facebook. I wasn't communicating with anyone except for, I actually communicated a little bit with Lisa, who's in the room, and Jasmine and Ron, and that's it. I didn't communicate with anyone else. And when my 3 weeks ended, I received guidance, which you may remember, to have a year of increased silence. And that involved cutting a lot of different activities out of my life so that I could spend literally hours every morning going within through this seven steps practice. And I was also guided not to listen to, right now, any other teachers or read any other books but this Seven Steps book. So all of that has been taken out. So it's not a complete loss of information because, again, I'm still in Facebook. But it's a very strong reduction. And what's happened through this very strong reduction of information and the spending a lot more time alone and just focused on this Seven Steps work is that now I see clearly what almost happened. I see clearly that my mind wanted to be enlightened and that that idea was being sincerely entertained. And had there not been some kind of a change and an adjustment, the Adjustment Bureau, Jay calls it, if I had not been sent to the Adjustment Bureau, it's possible that I would, quote, be enlightened now. Not really, but you know what I mean. So I am in a year, and I don't know how long it will last. You know, I was told to have a year of increased silence, and I don't know at the end of the year what's going to happen. But I am in a year of getting back to a purity that is very firm, very clear, and very non-confused. And yet, sometimes when people hear words like firm and clear, they think not happy, too hard. In fact, I had some friends tell me that they thought I was trying too hard. That's not here. I'm very happy. I play a lot with my family, with Jasmine and Danielle. You know, I play a lot with them. I love my Seven Steps work. There's not a feeling of, in fact, it doesn't even feel like I'm coming from a sense of lack and that I'm trying to get something I don't have. None of that is there. So there's no feeling of being too hard on myself. It just feels like, oh my gosh, I almost went off in the wrong direction. Thank God I was pulled back. But every now and then you'll see little reminders showing up in the journal, reminding me that this practice right here, right now, that I'm involved in, this is offering me awakening and not running off and entertaining myself in some other way. You know, it's funny. NTI says that the spiritual path is the highest of all paths in the world. In the world. But then Holy Spirit says, but in order to awaken, you have to step off of that path with me. So what that indicates is that we can play around on this spiritual path with all of the glitter of the spiritual path for a very long time. You know, at the end of NTI and NTI Revelation, it talks about the spiritual path is a two-edged sword. It says it can lead to life or it can lead to death. And what it is up to you. And then it also tells us that only the Christ within, you know, the inner guidance, inner wisdom, only that can lead you on this tricky and muddled path. So it seems to refer to always checking in, always checking in, always checking in. I posted a post, I think it was last night. It was actually re-quoting Bentino Massaro from his page, where he said something in these magnificent words. I love the way he expressed it. He said something about if it doesn't resonate fully with you, you know, really excite you, and excite you in the sense that I'm going to get more freedom from this, right? If it doesn't resonate with you and excite you completely, then you know, don't take it. Leave it alone. And Buddha said the same thing. Buddha said, you know, do not believe anything, no matter where you read it, no matter who says it. And then he says, not even if I say it. This is the Buddha. Not even if I say it. Unless it jives. He didn't use the word jive, but I can't think of the exact quote. Unless it jives with your own common sense. And by common sense, he meant inner wisdom. So again, what was happening for me was I was listening to so many people and I was listening to so many appealing ideas that my mind was getting attracted to the appealing ideas and I was losing that connection that I've had so well since I've started the spiritual path with that inner wisdom that knew exactly how to guide me. And so this year is bringing me back to the purity of that guidance. And what I'm finding now is now I'm starting to have what I would call the strength or the balls. It actually sometimes feels like the balls. To stay with my guidance even when, you know, a lot of people are telling me that I'm wrong. I posted also on Facebook, I think it was about a week ago. Some of you may have seen this. I posted two little videos. The first one was a candid camera video that Dave the Wave sent to me of people in an elevator. Actually, there was one person in the elevator, right, facing the front like we always do, and then three candid camera staff members would get on the elevator and face the back. And the person who was standing there facing the front like we normally do, because that's where you see the doors open, that's where you can see what floor it's on, it makes sense to face the front. We don't just do it out of habit. Well, I would start getting nervous because everybody else was facing the back. And eventually, in every single candid camera shot, the person would turn and face the back, even though it made no sense. They would go against their own inner wisdom in order to fit in. Yeah, sheep following the crowd. And then when I shared that video, someone on Facebook called Still Real, shared another video with me. It was a psychological experiment where they had, I think it was around 10 or 12 people, all of which were actors except for one person. One person was the subject. And they showed them a line and then a little bit of white space, and then three more lines. And all the subjects had to do was say which two lines are the exact same length. And actually, there was enough difference in the lines that it wasn't even difficult to tell which line had the same length. And what happened was the first time around, the correct answer was number two, and I think the actors were all saying three, and the subject just kind of laughed and said, but it's two. You know, like, what are they saying? It's two. You know, because it was so obvious, it was two. But by the second time around, the subject began to get nervous and then just began to copy whatever the rest of the group said, even though it was obviously the wrong answer. And they said in the video they ran this experiment dozens of times and they had the same results each time. Muji. Muji says something, which I happen to have seen on Facebook a couple times this week. People have posted it. And again, I'm going to not quote him exactly because I'm a terrible quoter. But Muji says something about be willing. What's it? He says something like be willing not to have any friends. There's something else he says in there. Be willing not to have any friends. I don't remember what the other thing is. You know, be willing not to be a part of a crowd, I'll say. But then he says be willing to stand alone. And there's a reason that Muji says this. I know that reason from within myself. Because there's so much glitter out there. Yeah, Papaji said he did not want any friends. There is so much glitter out there. Glitter that everybody else may be saying, this is it, this is it, I'm happy, this is it, we've got it, this is it, this is it. And it's not it. And there's something in you that knows that's not it. But the temptation to go and start dancing in circles with everyone else and say this is it is so strong. Maybe being sequestered for a year in order to get away from that attraction is what's needed. Maybe having people like Muji tell you over and over and over again, maybe watching the elevator candid camera video over and over and over again. But the bottom line is, if we really want truth, not something else, not fitting in with the group, not just being high on spirituality, if we really want truth, we must learn to find our inner guide and follow it, even if everybody else is walking in a different direction. And like I said, it takes him balls. I find it sometimes, well, I don't even know if I should use the word sometimes. I find it difficult. Yeah, we go to truth alone. We wake up to, you know, you could say everyone and everything, but we go there alone. So for me, right now, it's the seven steps practice. And so again, that's all 304 is about. By being firm, consistent with what is taught in this journal, one prepares for awakening. And I would like to again say this is really talking to me. I'm not asking the whole rest of the world to do what's in my journal. All I am doing is sharing what's happening with me. And if there's anything to take away from, quote, my teaching, what's to be taken away is have the balls to follow your inner guidance, no matter what. It's not copy. I'm not trying to say copy Regina. I'm not trying to say do what I'm doing because I'm doing the right thing. I'm trying to say, if anything, do what I'm doing by knowing and following your guidance. And whether you're, if your guidance is something completely different, that's okay, right? If there's one skill that we need to learn in order to awaken, it's to know the difference within ourself between the ego and what A Course in Miracles calls the Holy Spirit. Lately, I've been calling it wisdom. Know the difference between those two. Know what they feel like, as Laurent would say, what they smell like. Learn the difference in you. And then learn to disregard ego as meaningless and follow Spirit all of the time. Again, even if everyone else is doing something different. So by being firm or consistent by what is taught, this says in this journal, but I'm going to say within yourself, one prepares for awakening. Learn to follow you, the right you. Learn to follow you consistently, consistently, consistently. Stay in step, stay in step. All right, let's scroll down, and we're going to click on number 305. I'll also post it in the room. And I've talked up a bit of a thirst here, so let me go ahead and get a drink as well before we go on. Oh, I see Lisa asked a question. What about ultimately stepping away from even the inner guide? I think the inner guide will do the stepping away. I think, you know, A Course in Miracles tells us God takes the last step. That will happen on its own. That's, you know, that the inner guide knows when to step away. We don't have to make that decision. All right. Oh, guide is still other. Oh, not to me, Lisa. I see what you mean, though. Guide is still other, but not to me. And maybe that's why I've switched to the word wisdom, because I don't have a sense of other anymore in the inner guide. So there's the difference. So I understand exactly what you're saying, because there was a time when, to me, Holy Spirit was an other. That's very clear that I went through that. But that is no longer true. But it is the right wisdom. You know, it's the wisdom that knows the way. So that's why I wouldn't step away. But yes, I totally agree with you, Lisa, that if there's a thought that the inner guide is an other, at some point that thought needs to die. You know, how can you awaken to non-duality if you still have the thought that you're being led by an other? But that might also happen naturally. You know, it did for me. I don't remember making a conscious decision like, okay, as of today, I'm not going to think of my inner guide as an other anymore. It just kind of melted away, you know, and then it wasn't. And then it was wisdom, and my language changed. Yeah, it's grace cooking us, exactly, exactly. So that kind of happened. Yeah. All right, so let's look at number 305, first in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Engrossed in a dream, you have forgotten your true self. That's pretty clear. Engrossed in a dream, you have forgotten your true self. All right, let's look back at the journal. When mind attention strays to the world, truth is forgotten. Forgetfulness is not the way to remember. Be firm with the practice taught in this journal. Okay, one of the things that I hear, which maybe for some people is appropriate, I'm not saying that, you know, we're all led by our own inner guidance and we don't need to be led the same way. Okay, I like to say that as a qualifier. But one of the things that I was hearing that my mind was attracted to, all right, that wasn't my inner guidance, was basically, you don't need to do anything. You're enlightened now. Drop the practice. Stop pretending. Be awake. And for some people, that might be true. Maybe they're at the point. In fact, I believe Papaji, you know, when he came to Ramana, Papaji was at the point where the practice had become an addiction for him. He was literally addicted to spiritual practice. And Ramana pointed this out to him and told him to drop the practice. Right? Because that was like his last attachment was the spiritual practice. Somebody else's last attachment may be something else, you know, their child or, you know, in the Krishna story, the cow. But Papaji was addicted to practice. He needed to let go of practice, right? But just because that was Ramana's guidance to Papaji, does not mean that's the right guidance for every individual now. You could say that at the level of awakening, not at the level of truth, at the level of truth there's no difference. But at the level of awakening, you could say we're all in different places at the same time, and we need the right guidance for us right this moment. And so when my mind started to hear, drop the practice. Just stop saying you're not awake. You know, you're awake. Just say it. Just be it. Just do it. My mind was attracted to that. That's it. I'm awake. I'm awake. That's it. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. But it's not true. Not for me. It may have been for Papaji. But it's not true for me. And when I go back within, when I get into that space where I know I'm listening to inner clarity, there's no question in me. When I get in that space, my inner guidance is still telling me to practice. It's giving me exactly what the practices are, but it's telling me to be as consistent as I can be. Now, it doesn't ask me to punish myself if I forget for a while. You know, if I forget, I'm not to judge myself, I'm just to go back to it. You know, it's a very, for me, I don't know how to describe both firmness and gentleness being together, but they are. It's not burdensome. It comes from the heart. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe from the mind, the exact same thing. You got to practice, practice, practice. It's like you're being whipped, right? But from the heart, it's not true. You're not being whipped. It's just a knowing. This is where I am now. This is what I need to do. I need to stay with this practice. I need to be as consistent as I can. This is what's most helpful. So what 305 is saying is that when mind attention strays to the world, and this is true for me now, if I start focusing on anything in the world, and the moment that I focus on the world, I start thinking I'm a person again. It's automatic. There's no realization at all of what I am as soon as my attention returns to the world fully. I'm pop a person. Just like that. But when I stay very consistent with my spiritual practice, the person begins to get very, very weak, very, very shadowy. In fact, a shadow, or the Course describes it as a thin veil, is a very fair way of describing it. It's not who I am. It is just an appearance. And the difference is whether I'm remembering in that moment inside of my mind, inside of me, to practice, or whether I'm totally forgetting and getting caught up in the world. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing, whether I'm doing dishes, having a conversation with my daughter, hiking a mountain. It has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with where my attention is. If my attention strays, I'm a person. Pop, automatically. When I stay centered in my practice, I'm not a person. And at this point in, you could say, my spiritual maturity, I need to be spending as much time as possible in not a person. I need to grow and develop in not a person. And I grow and develop in not a person by being as consistent as possible with my practice. Do you see how this makes sense for me? So when mind attention strays to the world, truth is forgotten. Forgetfulness is not the way to remember. I'm not going to wake up if I get up and spend 20 minutes every day in spiritual practice, then get out from my chair, walk away, and never do a spiritual practice again. I'm going to be a person. To tell me right now, stop, you're enlightened, you're awake, just stop, is to say, go ahead, be a person. Keep thinking you're a person. And fortunately, my heart is wiser than that. Fortunately, my heart knows this. My heart knows it's not time for the practice to stop here. And so the practice is very lovingly, very gently, and very firmly continuing to be recommended for me. So when mind attention strays to the world, truth is forgotten. Forgetfulness is not the way to remember. Be firm with the practice taught in this journal. Again, that's talking to me. It's not asking anyone else to study and memorize my journal. All right, so if you scroll down, you can click on number 306. And I'm going to post that link in the room for you. Okay, so 306 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Nothing dies. The body is just imagined. There is no such thing. That's one thing I did notice in this movie that I watched. I hesitate to tell you because I know some of you might want to go see the movie. So if you want to go see the movie, The Odd Life of Timothy Green, turn down your volume now. I'll give you the thumbs up when you can turn it back on. If you don't care about going to see the movie or you don't mind having the end told to you in advance, go ahead and listen. But basically, Timothy Green comes out of a wish. He grows out of a garden and he has some leaves. And his purpose is to fulfill every one of these wishes. And every time he fulfills a wish, a leaf falls. And when all of the wishes have been fulfilled and all of the leaves have fallen, he goes. The word die is never used. He disappears. All right, let me give these guys, if anybody turned down the volume, let me give a thumbs up. Let's see, where is the little thumbs up? I'll just give this signal. Oh, wait, I see the thumbs up. There it is. There it is. Okay, now let me send that. They can turn up their volume. All right, so the point is, and A Course in Miracles talks about this as well, you know, you could say that's true of the body. The body is here to fulfill wishes. Wishes for an experience that is something different than truth. And when all of the wishes are fulfilled, it disappears. Now, there's two different ways that happen. One is that while the wishes are being fulfilled, more wishes are also being made. So while all of the wishes are being fulfilled, if more wishes are being made, then the body disappears in what appears to be death, and another life comes back in order to start, you know, a reincarnation, in order to start fulfilling more wishes. So if we're in the process of fulfilling wishes and making wishes, you know, we stay on that life cycle, birth and death thing. But if we can learn to let life play itself out, let these wishes that have already been made just play themselves out while remaining detached from what the body is doing, what the playing out of the story is, and staying very focused inwardly and therefore not making any more wishes. Well, then what happens at some time is that the attachment to the body idea completely ends. We no longer need the body, you could say. And in that way, the body disappears. So nothing dies, ever. There's just a continuation of the wish cycle going on from what appears to be one lifetime to another lifetime. Or the wish cycle is ended through inner practice, through inner focus, and the wishes all run out, and the attachment to body and the belief in body dies, What we are, of course, doesn't. So it just vanishes, it disappears, it ceases to exist, but it was never there in the first place, so it doesn't really matter. So nothing dies, the body is just imagined, it's here to fulfill wishes, but there's really no such thing. It's an imaginary tool to fulfill wishes. All right, so let's look and see what's in the journal. Number 306. Reality lives. It is constant. That which isn't constant does not exist. It does not come and go. It is not born and it does not die. It is presently non-existent, not real, imagined. And what imagines it? The wishes. I remember when I was living in North Carolina, you know, again, riding NTI and listening to what at that time I perceived as Holy Spirit, an other. But listening to Holy Spirit, and Holy Spirit began to point out to me that every judgment is actually a wish. Every time we judge anything, like I'm thirsty again right now because I'm talking. I'm okay with the fact that I'm thirsty. And when I feel like taking a break and taking a sip, I will. But let's just use this as an example. Let's say for some reason I thought I'm not supposed to be thirsty. You know? I'm not supposed to be thirsty. Or I wish I wasn't thirsty. These judgments, I'm not supposed to be thirsty, or I wish I wasn't thirsty, these are what continues the appearance of illusion. And the day that Holy Spirit pointed out this to me, you know, I don't remember all the details, but I remember I just kept noticing one wish after another after another. You know, my eyes might land on the house, and I'd say, boy, I wish those windows weren't so dirty. And then I look over here at the house, and, oh, I wish that table wasn't so dusty. And then I look in the mirror, oh, I wish I wasn't so fat. And then I go to this next one literally happened. The rest of them I'm just making up because I don't remember the details. But I went to Walmart that day and I got this shopping cart with this wheel that's kind of stuck trying to go left. And it was really hard to push. I wish the shopping cart wouldn't do that. It's endless. This is what keeps the body appearance real. This is what keeps the belief that I'm a person real. This is what keeps us going from one lifetime to another lifetime, is all of the wishing, and the wishings are all in the realm of imagination. They're all imagining I'd be happier if something was different. This is why acceptance is such an important spiritual practice, because if we truly move into a heart acceptance, then we move out of the wishing and out of the judgment. Out of the imagination. Just being with what is, even though the world's not real, just being with what is, I'm no longer wishing. I'm no longer imagining. I'm no longer writing a script for me to live out in this lifetime or the next lifetime. If you use the example of, you know, let's say we were writing a TV show, we're all script writers. We as long as we keep writing a script, that TV show is just going to keep airing. But what happens if we all to say, okay, that's it, we're not writing any more scripts, we quit? There may still be like 8 more shows because we wrote those already, right? But after those 8 more shows, the show goes off the air. So part of what we're here to do is to learn to stop our script writing. Learn to stop wishing, simple little wishes that things were different is script writing. Thank you. I guess Danielle heard I was thirsty because she brought me water, but I actually already have water. But it's nice to know you're listening. Isn't that sweet? No, I didn't get a smoothie this time, just water. So reality lives, it's constant. The world, the body, the perception, I'm a person, it's imagined. And that imagining comes out of our wishes or our judgments. They're the same thing. We want to stop imagining, stop script writing by moving into acceptance and being internally focused. That's our role. That's what forgiveness really is. And if you want help with this, I really recommend reading, although I very seldom try and sell my own books. I do recommend reading The Teachings of Inner Ramana. They're excellent on this point, that book. The Teachings of Inner Ramana. It would be very helpful. Okay, let me read this one more time and then I have to get out of here. So number 306, reality lives, it is constant. That which isn't constant does not exist. It does not come and go. It is not born and it does not die. It is presently non-existent, not real, imagined. We make it up. Our job is to stop the script writing. Okay, I'll be back tomorrow for a full hour and a half, beginning at 1:30 Eastern Time. Good night, everyone.